Shalom, I'm Roots Metals.
Hello, I'm Neurotic Jewish Gay.
As two Jews on the internet, we're bombarded with anti-Semitism constantly, so we've learned to cope with it how we know best, with humor.
We think we're pretty funny, and we didn't want you guys to have to miss out on how hilarious we are, so we've decided to invite you in. Welcome to our podcast, Do You Wanna Talk Shit?
Go for it. Yeah.
Hi. today we are going. Fuck. Sorry. So, as you guys know, last week we talked about how the Jewish organizations are failing us and, you know, have led us to this point. Now we want to talk about the success of Islamist organizations. As Debbie said last week, the Hamas leader, I forgot his name, literally thanked U.S. college campuses. U.S. college students. And we're going to take a deep dive into that because
to how
there's
this
a lot
happened.
More behind it than meets the eye.
Yeah. Yeah. So as I was going into that tangent about Hamas, I do want to like talk about this because it's something that I don't know about you, Amelia, but like literally since October 7th, it's been like incessant, like Israel created Hamas, you know, like blah, blah, blah. Israel did not create Hamas. What happened was that in the, I think towards the late 70s/early 80s, Israel funded this Islamic charity that was associated with the Muslim Brotherhood. As you said, the Brotherhood did not engage in violence. Like they, you know, they had like this Islamist like worldview, obviously, and ultimately envisioned a caliphate, but they did not violently clash with Israel.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that at the time, the Muslim Brotherhood took the form of like charities and hospitals, you know, built up around the place. Yeah. And I believe we, you know, funded them as, I think the main concern at the time was like the PLO and Fatah.
They wanted to destabilize, the PLO because when people say that like, oh, Israel wanted to destabilize the PLO, what people don't, today at least, don't understand is that the PLO up until Oslo was straight up a terrorist organization. I mean, like full on Hamas style, except not like with the religious spin.
Yeah, exactly. They
did everything from like trying to poison like Israel's water supply. That's actually like, I believe the first thing that Arafat did, to like a bunch of massacres. So, like, Israel wanting to destabilize the PLO wasn't, like, Israel being like, oh, like, we're going to fuck up your government, you know? It was, there's this terrorist group that is incessantly doing shit. So, we're instead going to elevate this charity that has clinics, schools, the Islamic University of Gaza. Now, this charity was associated with the Muslim Brotherhood, which at the time engaged in no violence against Israel. So you would see why Israel would want to do that. Eventually, the founder of this charity went on to found Hamas, but Israel did not create Hamas. In fact, when Israel first started noticing that they were arming themselves, they arrested the guy. So it's like, they were not like trying to, it's not like the US, how the US like literally armed the Taliban so that they would fight the Soviets. It's not the same situation. And it like really frustrates me that we're like being victim blamed in so many directions, but this one particularly frustrates me.
Yeah. I also wanted to note, so just on that, I will link my sources. But so the thing about the Muslim Brotherhood is that, and I guess Islamism as a whole, this was, it was pretty fringe up until the Six-Day War, at which point Islamism started to replace, you know, secular Arab nationalism. Not really sure why, Debbie, maybe you know why, but I thought that was pretty interesting.
I think, like, from what I've seen, there was, like, a... Okay, so first of all, like, Palestinian nationalism, like, Arab nationalism started as mostly secular. But when there's the split between greater Arab nationalism and Palestinian nationalism, which happened in 1920, I believe, because the Mufti had, like, beef with other guys, it took, like, a religious spin because this guy was a part of the Muslim Brotherhood. After 1948, Palestinian, like, quote-unquote resistance slash terrorism was sponsored by the surrounding Arab countries, particularly, like, Egypt, who would, like, literally sponsor, like, Palestinians to, like, go and attack, like, Israelis at the border. These Arab countries were largely, at the time, allies with the Soviet Union. So they had, like, a more like a socialist spin. And so it was more of, like, a secular movement. But I think that after the Six-Day War and stuff, there was a feeling that, like, this, like, secular campaign to liberate Palestine, quote unquote, wasn't working. And that, like, you know, like, there needed to be something more, and that something more was kind of, like, going back to the original Islamism that is, like, associated with early Palestinian nationalism.
That's really interesting. Like sort of, like, turning to religion when, like, shit doesn't go your way.
Yeah. Which, I mean, is
pretty which is, like, common, pretty
I would say, in life.
Yeah. So, I feel like that's a pretty good, background. So I did a bit of research on this again,
Wait, to go back to that real quick, sorry, in terms of, like, the shift, something really interesting is that, like the Soviet Union, like, openly sponsored groups like the PLO, but they were, like, more wary of these, like, Islamist groups. But after Hezbollah was founded in 1982 during the Israeli-Lebanon war, the Soviet Union started having, like, this, like, weird, like, tentative relationship with Hezbollah, where, like, they indirectly funded them, but not too directly, because they were, like, very suspicious of, like, the religious aspect, but at the same time, they were, like, all for, like, their goal to destroy Israel. And then, like, they also were, like, wary of Iran's, like, involvement because they saw them as, like, competing for influence in the region. So, like, I don't know. It's weird.
Here's the thing. Like, I obviously, like, a normal person, just, like, watch documentaries about Iran all the time. like, people, like, a lot of these organizations, so, okay, take... You know, Iran obviously funds Hamas. No dispute there. So Iran is a Shia, is like a militant Shia. It's like a terror state. But my point is that it's Shia. Hamas is a Sunni.
Yeah.
Like, it's just...
It's the enemy of my enemy.
It's a weird, like... It's a weird... It's... They've, I guess, bonded with their mutual hatred of Jews. But, you know, even if the Jews, like, just left the existence of the face of the earth, like, what do you think would happen? Truly.
I mean, I feel like if this is actually something that I think about in terms of, like, okay, so, like, say Palestine was freed. And by that, I mean, like, from the river to the sea. I don't mean two-state solution.
Like, no blood trail.
Yeah. That shit would be a disaster. Like, I feel like there's no, you know, so much of this movement, or most of this movement, or all of this movement is, like, in opposition to Israel. But, like, is there, like, actually, like, a plan for what happens after? There isn't. And it would, I think, be a very bloody civil war. And Palestine would turn into, like, a failed state like Lebanon or Yemen.
Oh, Gaza.
Or Gaza. But yeah, like, I don't know. Because I had this conversation with someone like many years ago, or like I was saying that, like, you know, when to have a functioning state, you can't just be in opposition to something. You have to be for something. And I think the great failure of the Palestinian movement is that it's only been in opposition to Israel. There's no building. It's just destroying. And they were like, well, you know, like most independence movements are like that. And I'm like, actually, no, like I don't think people realize like the work that the Zionists put into Israel before, like way before Israel actually became a state. Like by the time partition happened, it had been decades and decades of building institutions that would permit a state to function. And so, like, I certainly believe that if those resources had been used for something like that in the Gaza Strip, we would have a very different situation.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, literally, like, what if? I mean, yeah, it's, I don't know, like, what do you even say?
I think ultimately, like, say, like, the Jews, like, disappeared, and it was just, like, Hamas and Iran, like, I think ultimately they would fight, because they adhere to, like, different types of Islam.
Yeah, literally. So, yeah, no, it's actually really interesting when we see, you know, these alliances, like...
Yeah. But, I mean, this happens all the time. Like, I've said so many times, like, for the Soviet Union, like, the Nazis were, like, their mortal enemy. Like, the Soviets fucking hated the Nazis, and, like, for good reason. The Nazis, like, killed so many Soviets. But in like the 50s, the Soviet Union started exporting Nazi propaganda to the Arab world to turn their opinion against the Jews and like inflame anti-Israel sentiment. So it's like when people are unified in their hatred of Jews, they will like ally with even like their worst enemies.
I want to go into this because we'll talk about it a bit more, but Debbie's gonna go into, you know, again, how Zionism used to be, you know, the more liberal position. In the late 60s, I think, after the 67 war, it was flipped on its head and it was made to be a social justice, you know, kind of thing. And I think that's really important to talk about, and we're gonna talk about it.
Yeah.
A, because it's fucking crazy, and B, it's analogous to what has happened on U.S. campuses, and it's crazy. It's like a long sustained campaign of a unholy, I'm like stealing Astro Nomani's words, you guys should read her book anyway, an unholy alliance between Islamists and the progressive left. So Debbie, what happened?
What happened? So I am gonna come at it from the more like secular Soviet perspective, because I feel like for this to be able to happen in the first place, the progressive left already had to like adopt the idea that Zionism was not progressive. And the way that this happened really was, So initially, during like the founding of the State of Israel, like the Soviet Union voted in favor of partition. And while there was like a international embargo against Israel and the Arab states during the war, an embargo that the U.S. started, by the way, because like people make it seem like the U.S. created Israel. And I'm like, actually, no, because like the surrounding Arab countries already had armies. The Jews did not. And we had an embargo on us. So like they literally had to smuggle stuff in. But the only country that was like willing to sell arms to Israel was Czechoslovakia. And through them, the Jews got like Soviet equipment during the war, which was like crazy to people, crazy to the Arabs, who are like, why do they have like Soviet tanks?
Why did they do? Do we know why the Soviets wanted to, like, even gave a shit?
Well, I mean, because in the early, the founding fathers and mother, Golda Meir, of the State of Israel, were socialists, and they saw Israel as like a possibility of like exporting socialism to the Middle East. Now, I think they underestimated how angry the surrounding Arab countries would be about it. And then they kind of quickly realized like, oh, instead of supporting the guy that everyone hates in the Middle East, let's support everyone else and kind of like make them socialist, quote unquote. Which is like the other thing that I want to say about the Soviet Union is that like, and this has happened since the Soviet Union existed, but for some reason, the far left specifically cannot comprehend that the Soviet Union was an empire. That Russia literally violently colonized so much land, like Siberia, like that colonization was so violent, but for some reason it's like they think there's like good imperialism and like bad imperialism. And I think that like kind of like has transferred today to like Ukraine, which like there's definitely a lot of people on the far left that are like anti-Ukraine. But yeah, so the Soviet Union was an empire. The idea that they were on the side of like indigenous marginalized groups is like fucking hilarious, if you know anything. But that's how they sold themselves to the West, to the left in the West. Or yeah, to the left in the West specifically. So that and like they supported like a lot of like black, what's it called? Like black liberation type of people. Which is why like, you know, like Angela Davis is like really not a friend of Israel. Like that, right? It's really honestly 100% to a T what Hamas has been doing over the past several decades is like infiltrating the left by like uplifting certain causes to make it seem like they are a kind of group that they're not. So for example, like they sponsored, the Soviet Union did, sponsored a lot of independence movements in Africa. Like they're like, oh, like we're on the side of the indigenous little guy. And Palestine became one of their causes, like so much so that like literally Palestinian Authority, the PLO like was basically established in Moscow. Like their charter was, I believe, signed in Moscow. Like don't quote me on it, but I'm like almost positive. The people in the PLO were like appointed by the Soviets. Like this was like very, very much a Soviet project. Yeah. And then there's like the whole thing with Zionism. Mm-hmm. Like really, it was the Soviets that like associated Zionism with racism.
Yeah.
They, after World War II, as I said, like the Nazis were like the arch enemies of the Soviets. And obviously like anti-Semitism became very, very highly associated with the Nazis. And the Soviets needed another excuse. So like they basically became quote unquote anti-Zionist and started persecuting Jews on the basis of Zionism. And in many cases, it was like completely unfounded. Mm-hmm. And there, in fact, okay, so let me like get my notes for this because it's like not, okay. So in 1969, the United Nations passed the International Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination, okay? The U.S. and Brazil wanted to add a clause that condemned anti-Semitism. The Soviet Union was scared that adding such a clause would create a problem for them because they were systematically like oppressing their Jews. And so they said, okay, you know what we need to do? We need to, like, that's fine, but we need to add a clause to this convention that equates Zionism with Nazism. Mm-hmm. Neither clause passed. Like the anti-Semitism clause did not pass and the Zionism equals Nazism didn't pass. But this like set a groundwork. And then in 1975 is when the UN passed the infamous Resolution 3379, which said Zionism is a form of racism. What's funny is like the resolution like never defined Zionism. Mm-hmm. So like, which is, you know, like you would think if you have a resolution on something that should be defined, but it's like purposefully vague, yeah, right? Because it really is just a cover to like marginalize Jews, mm-hmm, you know? So anyway, that's when like it really became like cemented that Zionism was anti-progressive, anti-left, which is like, it's so bizarre because like, while not all forms of Zionism are left, obviously, like look at who is in the government in, mm-hmm, Israel right now. The founding of Israel was like very, very socialist. Yeah. So it's like just weird. But yeah. Yeah. Like here we are now.
Yeah. Holy shit.
You know, it's also interesting. Sorry. This is also kind of unrelated, but after the Zionism, like the Zionism is racism resolution actually was like one of the biggest things that influenced the settler movement in Israel.
Really?
Because, yeah, which is kind of, mm-hmm, crazy because it was so before that resolution that, you know, there was the first settlements was people trying to go back to the places from which they had been displaced in 1948. And like the, you know, the government tried to stop them and kind of like stop this from becoming a thing. And then after the Zionism is racism resolution, like there's like this attitude in Israel that was like, oh, like it doesn't matter what the fuck we do. We like, no matter what we do, we are wrong. If Zionism is wrong, then the state of Israel is wrong. And there's, it doesn't matter like how much we adhere to what the international community wants us to do. Our mere existence is, mm-hmm, a problem. And so they just stopped giving a fuck. And like literally is when like the movement like really became a thing where like they started legitimately building settlements. Yeah. Which
fuck.
Yep.
That's like nuts. I mean, mm-hmm, yeah. So in that, fuck, what word was I going to use? Like, by that same token, I just wanted to introduce a couple of things first before we go into this whole, like, Hamas is, like, anchoring themselves in the U.S. in the late 80s. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure a bunch of you will remember the infamous CUNY law speech, graduation speech, which was like incoherent and kind of bizarre. It was last year in 2023. A girl called Fatima gave the speech. She was talking about all kinds of shit. You know, a lot of just anything like except a law school graduation. But something caught my eye that I feel like a lot of people may have missed just because, like, I spend way too much fucking time thinking about this. But she said something, I believe it was in the end of the speech, about the HLF 5. She called the Holy Land Foundation 5 Palestinian political prisoners in the U.S. So, like, no one knows what the fuck that means. Obvs. So I decided to learn a little bit about it. So the Holy Land Foundation was the biggest Islamic charity in the United States. I believe it was in the early 2000s, they became, like, the FBI began to monitor them and wonder what they were doing because of suspicions of, you know, funding terrorist activity overseas. I believe in 2008 or 2009, the leaders of the charity, the Holy Land Foundation, five of the leaders were sentenced to federal prison because they wired $12 million to Hamas, right? When you ask people about it, there's, like, a lot of campaigns to free the leaders. They're called the HLF5. People are like, they went to prison because they fed Palestinian orphans, like, shit like that, which is obviously not the case. Yeah. In that trial, a lot of shit came out, a lot of evidence that led to some of the things we'll be referring to today. So we're happy to link that. But yeah, so that, I just wanted to source that. Hamas, we went through the, you know, founding with the Muslim. We did that, right? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So Hamas has, like, formalized its existence in the U.S. in 1988 when it created what was called the Palestine Committee, again, an offshoot of the Muslim Brotherhood. The committee's goals included, and I will quote, increasing the financial and moral support for Hamas, fighting surrendering solutions, and my favorite, publicizing the savagery of the Jews. Okay, so these organizations, you know, began to form. The main one was the Palestine Committee, and then think of it branching off into three other organizations. One of them, Islamic Association for Palestine. Another one, United Association for Studies and Research. And finally, Occupied Land Fund, which later became the Holy Land Foundation. Eventually, there was a fourth split with the same leaders, with leaders of, I believe, the first two, Islamic Association for Palestine, AAP, and United Association for Studies and Research, who actually formed CARE, the Center of American Islamic Relations. If they sound familiar, you may have heard the speech of Zahra Billu, who is, I believe, a CARE executive in San Diego. She made a speech in 2021, starting with, we need to pay attention to the Zionist synagogues. We need to pay attention to the Hillel on our campuses. We need to pay attention to the ADL, not in the kind of way that you would want attention paid to the ADL. but yeah, that was really interesting. Debbie actually has a post about it.
Yeah.
Because that was...
That's like spurred the Colleyville synagogue hostage crisis. Where the guy like literally listened, I think he listened, it was a while ago, but like he listened to that speech and then he went into this synagogue and held everyone hostage. And then because he was like demanding that the rabbi get in touch with this other rabbi in New York so that they could free
someone, Siddiqui.
The fuck you.
I believe her name is Afia Siddiqui, who is also in prison for, I don't believe it was related to the Holy Land Foundation. I'm also not exactly sure if that was the exact speech of Zahra Billu.
Yeah, I have a post about it from like a million years ago. Let me look back because I'm pretty sure it was the speech. I'm just going to.
There definitely, just while you're looking at that, there definitely was a campaign from CARE to free Siddiqui. And then that's what was the motivation behind Colleyville. So for this, Debbie, you good? Did you want to add anything just with that post?
Yeah. I'm just scrolling back on my Instagram to see what happened exactly because I had a whole timeline.
I remember. Just while you're like looking, this is one thing. And again, I'm not to like shit on the Jewish organizations that did this, but to shit on them. But when they teamed up, some Jewish organizations teamed up with Biden's strategy to combat anti-Semitism, CARE is now off, but at one point CARE was on, right? An organization linked directly through its founding and over the years to Hamas and freeing quote-unquote prisoners who, you know, funded terrorism. And this was back in, this was before October 7th. This was maybe in like July or it was midway through last year. Like, don't quote me, but when I saw some organizations, like, even like, yes, being invited to the White House is an honor and it is a privilege, but like we need to, like, integrity is so important. If CARE is there, like, why didn't we put up a fight? Like, I don't understand.
Because you also know sure as hell they would have put up a fight if it was, like, the other way around.
It makes no sense.
I found it, by the way. So 2010, Siddiqui is convicted of trying to murder American soldiers and officials in Afghanistan. During the trial, she told the judge that she didn't want any Jews on the jury if they had a Zionist or Israeli background. She stated, "I have a feeling everyone here is them, subject to genetic testing." After her conviction, she stated, "This is a verdict coming from Israel and not from America." Then, 11 years later, November 18, 2021, the Dallas-Fort Worth CARE chapter holds an online fundraiser for Siddiqui's defense team. Then November 27, so 9 days later, CARE's San Francisco executive director Zahra Billu gives a speech stating, "We need to pay attention when it comes to the Zionist synagogues. There are organizations out there who are working to harm you. I mean, the Zionist organizations, so know your enemies." CARE later defends her speech. Then, like, 2 months later is when the Colleyville hostage thing happened. He was demanding the release of Siddiqui. And yeah. So there's like a very, there was a very direct line from like CARE, you know, being involved in her release to this guy who is associated with CARE, being from, I believe, hold on a sec, being from the Dallas-Fort Worth area, which is the CARE that was fundraising for her, and then the speech, and then like 2 months later, he goes into a synagogue and holds everyone hostage because he's trying to free this woman.
A guy from London, no less, which is like fucking crazy. Like, yeah. He went to like the closest synagogue he could find. But just going back, so we have Muslim Brotherhood, offshoot is Hamas, offshoot is the Palestine Committee, which is where we have IAP, HLF, and then later on CARE. It's fucking crazy. So we have like, I'm sorry, 1 second, I just need to scroll. So yes, in the HLF trial, in the Holy Land Foundation trial, there are a bunch of exhibits. Some of them were, they were translated again using translators from the court. I wouldn't just put, you know, like random Arabic documents into Google Translate. I just wanted to emphasize that what I'm about to repeat to you guys met evidentiary standards to be admissible as evidence in U.S. federal court. One of these documents, I feel like Farfar with the document. Anyway, so here's one of the documents from the Muslim Brotherhood titled The General Strategic Goal of the group being Muslim Brotherhood in America, which was approved by the Shura Council and the Organizational Conference for 1987. I believe the Shura Council refers to Saudi Arabia, but we can double check that. So the general strategic goal of the group in America is, and I quote, enablement of Islam in North America, meaning establishing an effective and stable Islamic movement led by the Muslim Brotherhood, which adopts Muslims' causes domestically and globally, and which works to expand the observant Muslim base, aims at unifying and directing Muslims' efforts, presenting Islam as a civilization alternative, and supporting the global Islamic State wherever it is. So again, this was in 1987. And here is just some more of the memo, an introduction to the explanatory memo. We must summon and take along elements of the general strategic goal of the Muslim Brotherhood in North America. I will intentionally repeat them in numbers. They are, one, establishing an effective and stable Islamic movement led by the Muslim Brotherhood. Two, adopting Muslims' causes domestically and globally. Three, expanding the observant Muslim base. Four, unifying and directing Muslims' efforts. And also there, I didn't write it down, but I noted that there was a lot of stuff about adopting Islam in the U.S. And yeah, again, five, presenting Islam as a civilization alternative. And here is something that I found very interesting. From there, the issue of education and the higher studies in America is an essential issue and an important issue for the inside in order to control the institutions and in order to give political might to our brothers on the inside. Media and research, the authority on the way might come and close all of our newspapers and magazines. We have institutions issuing statements from America in order to make it difficult for the coming Palestinian Authority to block their entry into Palestine. It discusses here's some other memos. In the beginning, I don't want to like read all of this because it's like so much, but there's so here's an excerpt from an audio file from those early meetings. We want to make the educated segments and students aware that this will be done. And by this, we mean the goals that I previously mentioned. This will be done at the universities and at the school level, an awareness level at the general public, the masses, and awareness at the level of the young generations. Hold on, I'm sorry. A lot of this ends up talking about, and we can upload it to, we can provide a link, but a lot of this is talking about that what feeds the US media, what feeds, I'm sorry, young Muslim people is that it shouldn't always be the US media and the non-Islamic media. They wanted to build a network of faxes for quick initiatives. They discuss Nihad Awad, who I believe is the founder of SJP at UCLA. They discuss carrying student activism in universities and why that had decreased on their end at the time. They say we must bring it back, like we must bring university back as the children of the communities are the ones who will go to universities. Therefore, the work of IAP must become active in universities. We need to build a community. And it's just suggesting a bunch of activity. Here's a really interesting one from the birth of CARE. The quote is, "We'll form an organization to show the Americans that we are like not the Muslim Brotherhood. It'll be made of some of our people, our beloved ones, and let's not hoist a large Islamic flag. And let's not be," I hate this quote, I don't even want to repeat it. It says, "Let's not be barbaric talking." And it says, "We will remain a front. So if the thing happens," the thing being a lot of these organizations being shut down, "we will benefit from the new happenings instead of having all of our organizations classified and exposed."
So like they straight up were like, yeah, this is like
a yes, plan. It's like- literally, again, we will... link it to you guys, but this is from the Holy Land Foundation trial. It's a lot of these guys like went on to be like SJP founding members and stuff as well. It's literally the craziest shit I've ever like read in my life. Again, I'm not gonna like sit here and read this whole thing to you guys, but it's literally, it's there. It's mapped out. And, you know, no one has really paid attention to this because it sounds fucking crazy.
Yeah, because it's like it sounds like the crazy shit that they accuse groups like the ADL AIPAC. Like, okay, like speaking of, someone said that I'm paid by AIPAC the other day and I was like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
But, like, so, yeah, it sounds like that.
It's nuts. Like, and I read, like, another study a few months ago, and it was talking, basically, it was focusing on Islamist anti-Semitism on college campuses, And it said something like, you know, in America, because of the, because of how much like activism has grown, like good activism, and, you know, in a post 9/11 world, only the crazies talk about this, and the critical examination of Islamist anti-Semitism has basically been relegated to like the fringe right, and so no one can seriously or it. There's an image, you know, that no one can seriously can talk about it and be taken seriously. And, you know, we would not have put this on our podcast without like literally studying these documents. Cause like, if I didn't know any better, I wouldn't believe it. It's just,
I mean, it's really frustrating that like, we can't have this conversation because like at the end of the day, like, if a white supremacist kills us or like, you know, like radical Islamist kills us, like what's the difference? Like we still get killed.
The difference is that like progressives will feel bad if it's a white supremacist.
Exactly. And it's just like so frustrating. I mean, it's like Matt Siv or whatever, who like after the Coleyville thing, they posted like bitching about white supremacy and Donald Trump. And then when it turned out, it had nothing to do with that, then they like just like, deleted the tweet and didn't say anything. And then we're like, we don't want this to like increase Islamophobia, which like absolutely true. Like you don't want, like there shouldn't be an increase in Islamophobia because a Muslim does something bad. But like, why are you centering that right now when like what just happened was like an anti-Semitic hate crime?
And like, you know, while no one was killed, like that kid is gonna be fucking traumatized. I believe it was during a bar mitzvah, but correct me if I'm wrong. And like there was like, and everyone there and the whole fucking congregation is like gonna be so traumatized now. Like this wasn't a harmless, like that we even have to say that. This wasn't a harmless thing.
Yeah. Actually, like speaking of like, you know, being killed by a white supremacist versus being killed by an Islamist. So, which for the trigillionth time, Islamism is not the same thing as Islam. Islamism is a political ideology. What's it called? So, you know, like when Pittsburgh happened and obviously like the perpetrator was a white supremacist, I've had conversations with so many people in my DMs who are from Pittsburgh and they're like, you know, like this like intersectional community that embraced Tree of Life after what happened is treating us like shit now because of October 7th slash the ongoing war. And it's like they can only like comprehend one kind of anti-Semitism, and it's like, okay, so like that was not like sincere allyship with the Tree of Life community, you know, because now they're treating them like shit.
And that's like, just I'm going on my tangent now, sorry, but like that's this whole fucking collective liberation bullshit. But like, I'm not free unless you're free, and we're not free until everybody's free. Like that shit, like,
okay, first of all, that was like, that's an adaptation of a quote by a Zionist.
Can we get into that? Because I like have just such terrible associations.
Yeah, no, it was Emma Lazarus, and she was speaking specifically of it. So when she said this was when the pogroms were happening in Russia at the turn of the century, and people, like Jews, were being killed by the millions. The quote was specifically about how Jews in the U.S. can't let their, you know, their siblings in Russia be slaughtered. Like, the Jews in the U.S. won't be free until the Jews in Russia are safe. That is the actual original context of the quote. So it's just, like, fucking bananas to see how it's been twisted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I feel like Judith Butler was a big force in this. But I could be wrong. Anyway, what it's been turned into was collective liberation. And I don't know who started the collective liberation thing. Was that also Emma Lazarus or doesn't matter.
They just have like appropriated that quote to be like, we're not free until everyone's free.
So the idea is that, and I'm sure you guys have heard it in one way or another, it's that all forms of hate are interconnected. All struggles are interconnected. They're all the same, whether it's homophobia, racism, transphobia, Islamophobia, anti-Semitism.
They're all rooted in white supremacy.
Yeah, they're all rooted in the same thing, and that thing is white supremacy.
Which is, like, by the way, such a, like, Western-centric view.
So.
Because, like, they really legitimately think that there's no hate elsewhere in the world before the big bad white Europeans. You know what I mean? And it's like, you don't know anything. Know
because this isn't a consistent... This isn't a consistent thing. It just completely ignores the existence of all other kinds of, like, it's not only is it, like, the racism of, like, low expectation. Like, do you, like, what the fuck do you think? Like, I think people just, like, talk out of their ass and, like, hope that they'll be,
like, okay,
saved.
For example, I'm not going to name this person, but it's very annoying. This person is a very popular influencer who is Muslim, and she did a TED Talk where she was basically saying that homophobia in the Muslim world is not actually rooted in the Muslim world, but is a result of European colonization. And I'm just like, good Lord.
Like, what do you even say to that?
And the argument is kind of like, you know, like there's a lot of gay people in Islamic history, in Islamic countries. And I'm like, okay, well, there's gay people everywhere at all times in history. That doesn't mean that there's no hatred towards them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't know.
It's, like, insane, and it just does not acknowledge the realities of what it's like to live in places that are not the U.S. And, you know, like, I'll be the first to say the U.S. has a lot of fucking problems. Like, I'm not American, and, like, I look at the U.S. sometimes, and I'm like, what the fuck? That said, and I've seen this recently. I've seen people say it's not, like, just because it's not safe to be gay in Gaza, which is a stupid argument, which I, like, talked about last episode. You can go and see that.
Yeah.
But they'll be like, I know it's not safe to be gay in Gaza, but it's also not safe in America or Glasgow or Sydney or –
and it's like – fucking apples and oranges.
It's like apples and being thrown off buildings.
It's like literally saying like, oh, like, you know, it's true that it wasn't safe to be a Jew in Nazi Germany, but it's also not safe to be a Jew on an American college campus.
That is the best analogy I have fucking
like, heard. Get the fuck out.
Get the fuck out. Because that's exactly what it's like. Like, yeah. It's not.
Do you want to just like wrap it up? How do we wrap it up?
How do you wrap that up? We're kind of towards the end of this, right? This particular thought, about to go into the next thought. So instead, right, we can say like, we've got a lot more to talk about. You can kind of say like other, like, for example, if you're like, you know, we've got a lot to talk about like college campuses and how this is prevalent, but we're really seeing how important the PR element is in this on both like a practical level as well as a psychological one. If you want to hear more about this topic and hear more of what we've got to say, tune in next week and check us out on Instagram.
That was beautiful. Can we just use that?
Yeah. And next episode, should we go more into the collective liberation thing / Islamism? Okay.
Yeah.
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 Great. So just even say like, we'll get into that next episode. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah, the collective liberation thing, it's very enmeshed.
It's your pet peeve.
It's my special interest. It's literally my special interest. So yeah, we will get more.
My special interest is Poland.
Oh yeah, my other special interest is obviously Qatar. I hate Poland. Qatar. If I ever made merch, it would. I hate Qatar. Okay. Thank you for listening.
Yeah, this was fun, and I'm glad we're back.
And I will see you guys next week. All right, bye. We can just like.
Oh wait, eat shit. Holy Land yes. Foundation.
Slay.
'Jew Wanna Talk Shit is hosted by Roots Metals and Neurotic Jewish Gay. Produced by Zev Hurwicz. We are releasing weekly on Mondays. But for more content, check us out on Instagram. Thanks for listening.